And welcome. It's your girl, Cheryl, and I'm here with the Old School News Crew one more time. And we like to talk about all the controversial or interesting topics, news events, activities that are happening around our world. We do it every week. We come to you, and hopefully you'll join our conversation at some point. I want to introduce the Old School News Crew. We've got Mike Easterling.
Hello.
We have Brooke Barrick.
What up?
Taking Sheila's place. Anyway, and we have Winston Thomas.
Hello.
So, I want to say this right off the bat. If you're a listener and you want to join our conversation at any time, just email me at yourgirlcheryl@gmail.com. That's Cheryl with a C. And you can listen to some of the older podcasts at yourgirlcheryl.net. Check some of the older episodes out, but feel free to contact us, tell us what you want to talk about, or just take a chance and jump in here with anything we're talking about. Anyway, usually there's so many different things to talk about in any given week, but the one that I think taking priority right now has been with the Derek Chauvin verdict, is the police killings that have been going on around the country seem to be taking it's the top news these days. So, and I was just saying that I saw on the news yesterday that there have been 6 killings. I think this happened either the day of the verdict or the next day. There were 6 killings by police officers in a 24-hour period in that day, in that whole 24 hours. And whether or not they're justified or not, we don't know yet, but just the number. And you know that the other, Dante Wright, his killing took place while the trial was going on. So, I don't even know. What is this? Is it just, open season on Black people? Or is it, really just this, is it any response to the verdict? Or, what do you think? How do we get to 6 police killings in 24 hours?
Well, is anybody going? No.
Well, you can feel free.
I have
no
answer.
We can start off with you, Winston.
No, I don't know. You say 6 and I'll be open-minded. We got 323 million people in this country and at least 42 million Black people. So 6 is not really, it's not really a great number. No. Let's be open. Let's be open about it. It's not really a great number, but at the same time, if you're 1 of the 6, it's a but it's an intense thing. But the media is focusing on, everything that happens for the most part. So I guess you can keep it in perspective. It's a case by case thing. Some seem justified, in terms of at least the person did have a weapon, that sort of thing, right. But these shootings in the back and all that,
We don't know what kind of shootings they were. Were they, was it a shootout? Okay, and were all the police killed? Were there 6 Black police killings of Blacks by police, or just 6 police killings?
Oh, we're talking about Blacks. They only talk about Blacks.
No. Okay. They just said 6 killings. They haven't said 6 police killings. Every time I've read it, it didn't specify Black. But as I sort of went through the list, it looked like, just by the name, I wouldn't necessarily say they were all Black. But and they weren't all unarmed. And to put that number of 6 in perspective, I think the year before there had been 1,000 police killings within a year. But I think sort of the point is that there shouldn't really be police killings. Unless a criminal is coming at you and threatening your life, just to stop a crime or to in pursuit of a criminal, that's not a reason to kill a person. To detain them, to beat them up, to take them down, whatever you got to do, but to kill them. Why is it that people are being killed? And particularly in the few that have come up recently, not so much in that 6, but the ones that have been unarmed Black people. The ones that have been some Black people in recent weeks, these are people who were unarmed. And just like George Floyd, he was unarmed. Why is that resulting in people's killings and people dying? that's the question that I think, and particularly with this the young lady, the teenager, Micaiah Bryant, you know, why does she have to be killed because of what was going on and because of police intervention?
Yeah, that one, I think 10 years ago, or maybe less, may not have gotten the same type of scrutiny that it has today in the environment that we're in. I'm not certain somebody tell me what else that police officer could do when his job is to save lives and he sees someone trying to take a life. If he doesn't have a sign that says she's 16, in fact, she's a big girl, okay? It's not like, you know, he sat there for 9 minutes. Okay, that was an execution. This was a split second judgment I think he had to make, and he shot the person that he saw as the assailant. I know when he pulled up his car and saw it was black, he said, oh shit, I'm done. I'm not gonna be able to win no matter what I do. Yeah. Okay, if I don't shoot, now I got, you let that happen. Y'all need to do something. Now I'm hearing, you know, she's just a kid, but there's no sign. Once you get to a certain size and, you know, all he saw was one person trying to harm another. That was a tough one for him. I think once he pulled up out of that car.
Yeah, actually, I don't think all of these instances should be lumped together because they're all very different. Mm-hmm. And like you said, this particular case connected to George Floyd, those are two entirely different things. And even the young man right before her, Toledo, I think his name was, he was 13.
Mm-hmm.
His hands were up, but he did have a gun right before that and only didn't have and he didn't stop when he had the gun. And just like you said, another split decision. So I think that one and Micaiah Bryant, you know, I'm still waiting to see all the facts come out. But those two to me are not the same as George Floyd, or there's another one, a guy named, I'm not sure if it's Anthony Brown, Walter Brown, or I'll check on the name, but who they wound up shooting in the back. This happened this past week as he was driving away. So I don't know how you sort of justify that. So, but
I think the other thing that I find so incredibly suspect about all of it. Okay, so going to Winston's point about there's only six. Yeah, well, whenever there's an automobile crash that ends up in a fatality, we talk about that too, because it's not supposed to happen. And police are charged with protecting and serving, and I get that. And if somebody's in danger, then you use necessary force. I think the problem is that all too often, and very disproportionately so, in the instance of, you know, what's deemed necessary force tends to be escalated when it comes to Black people. Like, we're a threat no matter how you look at us. Like, we're a threat if we're selling cigarettes in the middle of New York City. We're a threat if we're passing a counterfeit bill. We're a threat. Everything we do is a threat. And so all of a sudden you fear for your life and, oh, woe is me, and let me grab my pistol. You know, and like, we're a threat if we're driving down the street and pulling into a gasoline station. So you got to come guns a-blazing. But it's
we're sleeping in our apartments, because to break into that girl's apartment, again, they're doing that and shooting because they're afraid that they're going to get shot. But would that have happened had they not broken into her apartment like that?
Right. And so all of that being said, why does it always seem to escalate with deadly force with us when Dylann Roof can be walking around? You got a 17-year-old kid in Illinois walking around with an AK, walking up to the police, and he's just shot off some people, and he's not a threat. An AK coming at me in any kind of shape or form is a threat, right? I'm not pulling you over to ask you if you want some damn Burger King. I'm not gonna see if you're okay. I'm not gonna say you're having a rough day if you've just blown away 8 people. Like, somehow or another, with Black people, and Black, we get just as guilty of justifying or equivocating or trying to minimize what is happening. But at the end of the day, this is technically what terrorism is.
Exactly.
Terrorism is when you have a few cases that make it bad enough for everyone to be scared. You terrorize people. And that's what the police have been doing in the United States before the United States was the damned United States.
But explain something to me. When you brought up Kyle Rittenhouse or Rittenhouse or whatever, the kid with the AK-47, how is it, and really this is taking race out of it, how is it that anybody can walk down a city street carrying an AK, carrying that gun, and it not make anybody stop? Not make the police stop? Well, I mean,
well, open carry is legal.
Is that even a race issue? Is that even a race issue?
No.
Open carry is legal.
I'm sorry, I didn't hear. Winston, then Brooke.
Open carry is legal there. So technically, he has the right to walk down the street with a gun. However, if he was Black, he would have been stopped and checked out. I'm convinced of that. I've seen tests of that. I've seen people test that on video.
Yep.
So that's a problem.
It goes to the one seed that's planted early in the minds of many white people, and that is that Black people are inherently dangerous.
But with no weapon
at all, they're dangerous.
But wait, before you get to the race issue, this is my question. Even if it's open carry doesn't necessarily mean that you have the gun in your hand and you're pointing at somebody. It could just mean that you have it in your holster on your hip. Okay, that's open carry. So why is it that somebody, regardless of age, regardless of race, who's walking down the street with a machine gun in their hands, you know, from the photos, he's got it in his hand, like his finger on the trigger kind of thing. Why is that not a reason for a police officer to stop somebody?
Here it is from their mindset. He's walking towards us. He's not afraid. Obviously, it's open carry. He's white. What could possibly be wrong with
you? As a police officer, you're risking your life on that.
What could possibly go wrong?
I find that amazing. And I don't even know if I think that's a race issue. I mean, I would be afraid.
It is absolutely a race issue. It is absolutely a race issue.
Almost everything in America is.
At the end of the day, white, just like January 6th, you had a whole bunch of folk with arms all up and down Washington, D.C., headed towards the Capitol in force. But you can't get anybody to come and protect the Capitol, all because they were white. And one of the senators even said it, which was mind-boggling to me. These are law-abiding citizens that respect law enforcement. And I'm like, okay, literally, they did exactly the opposite in the time that they were down on the Capitol. They broke the law and they beat law enforcement.
Yeah.
How, in the name of all things holy, did that senator even form his lips to say that after the fact? But they don't see it as cognitive dissonance. They're white people. They must be okay.
I got one for you. Did you see the Brad Pitt movie, World War Z, with the zombies?
No.
I don't know if you saw that one. Okay. Uh-uh. And I didn't watch it for a long time because these zombies, unlike older movies where the zombies walk real slow at you, these zombies were real fast. They would just, you know, they just come up at you. And if you're not going to see the movie, I'll tell you the ending. But Brad Pitt figures out that the reason that some of the zombies don't attack everybody, he figures out what that is. And there's a scene where he's walking and the zombies just run past him, like water flowing down a river, and they just, you know, go around him as if he's a rock in the middle of the river. Okay. And that's what it looked like on January 6th with this insurrection. You would have to have that kind of confidence that when 1,000 people were running at you, yelling and screaming with nooses and you know, flagpoles and tasers and all this, they're coming to take over this Capitol. And you as a person, as a white person, have so much confidence that they are not going to hurt you, that you would stand there defiant and expect that they're just going to run around you. I mean, I'm amazed. I've never had that kind of confidence in life. There's no way I think I've ever stood where I would think around Black people, white people, anybody, that a group of thousands of people running at, if for no other reason, you might just bump into me. I don't know. But I am amazed that of that, to identify that kind of confidence or security, is that what
that actuality, is? Well, in actuality, Cheryl, she doesn't get mentioned much, but there was one of the women that was with them, and she, in fact, got trampled to death. So that was one of the deaths down there. So I don't know. It's madness, but it is definitely a racial thing. This country needs to admit that. I think it's perpetuated in the media, in movies, the way we look, our complexion, our dress, all of that has an effect on how dangerous you appear to be.
Yep. And George Floyd was the epitome of that, 6'6", muscle bound, walked around showing his muscles, little 140 pound guy who got to be a police officer because probably he could show his whole world he's not a big baby. He's probably been pushed around his whole life. 140 pounds is a very small adult man, okay? That's the size of an average adult woman, all right? So he was his chance to be somebody. He had knelt on somebody else's neck before that person lived. So he probably figured, hey, this is cool. I'll do this. This is my thing, you know? It's fear. And Cheryl, everything is, you know, I would say this, everything isn't racist, but almost everything is racial, okay? Race comes into, sad, it comes into almost everything. Because the country was built on it, so it can't not do that.
I almost agree with you, Mike, except mm-hmm. for the fact that race even exists. I love Ta-Nehisi Coates' quote that racism is not a product of race. Race is the child of racism. Like even the fact that anything is racial is a byproduct of racism, because white people made it about that. I mean, that's like a historical fact. There are definitely different nationalities, and I get all of that. And nations will pit against nation, and that has always been the case, no doubt. But the fact that things are broken down into racial components and that we make it about that, that is a uniquely post-European imperialism thing.
Well, you know,
the fact that anything is racial is a result of racism.
I see how you wanted that. Okay.
I kind of see that. However, I don't know how you guys feel about this. I am of the belief that if we were all the same race, the same strife would continue based on other things. I do believe the fat would discriminate against the skinny, vice versa. I think mm-hmm. you'd have wars between the tall mm-hmm. and short.
Mm-hmm.
We already see, they don't do it so much now, but if you remember a couple decades ago, blondes used to get dissed by brunettes. If you were a blonde, you were dizzy. Remember those days?
Sure. Dizzy blonde. My daughter and I still joke about that in our house.
Right. Yeah. So
amongst ourselves, like we refer to each other as blonde.
Right.
Yeah.
So I think it's something that's wired into us. We have to find someone different to look down upon. We have what were you gonna say, Cheryl?
You know, it's funny about that, and this is not gonna be a popular statement I'm about to make, but I've always felt that about sororities and fraternities, and I did not pledge. And one of the reasons I didn't pledge is because when I was in high school, the opportunity to be in a sorority came up, and the fact that I was darker skinned than my friends, they wanted them in the sorority, but they didn't want me. And as I got older, the same thing happened to my sister. She went away to college and the sorority gave her a hard time. And so when I look at, you know, Deltas and AKs and everybody celebrating, you know, and I don't, because two of my sisters, you know, were in sororities. I mean, that's fine, to each their own, but I have never had a good feeling about particularly Black sororities who do the same thing in their entry procedures as white sororities do, and that they would look down on. So Winston, to your point, you know, we're going to find something to look down on somebody else about. And Black people do that all the time. I mean, the sororities and fraternities are just one situation. You know, everybody remembers the paper bag test. But, you know, the fact that we do that and we celebrate that, I've never been able to get to that point where you know, I see people celebrate each other because of their sorority anniversaries, and that's fine for you. But I'm not the one to talk to about sororities, you know. So
yeah, me neither. And it's interesting because, I mean, to your point, colorism is a byproduct of racism too. And I know like the Indians go through the same thing. Like people in India, Indians, I don't refer to Native Americans.
Yeah, I've heard
they
that.
They do the same thing.
Africans, Ethiopians, a totally different thing. Yep.
Yeah. Everybody. Well, and again, because of the infiltration of Europe into Northern Africa and the whole nine yards. So that it's still that thing. I think to Winston's point, yes, there is this supremacist history that sort of rides regardless of, like, it happens. The one that we've been floating for the last 400 years is a racial one across the globe. But there's always been this sort of supremacist mentality that's, if it's not again about race, it's about nationality or it's about whatever. And I think that's one of the reasons why I gravitate so strongly towards Ubuntu, because it introduces that notion of, all right, let's just cut the crap, you know, like, yeah, okay, up to this point, everybody has been this way and there's been different levels of it throughout history, et cetera, et cetera. But again, I think that humans also have it within them to be something better and different if we choose to be.
You know, I wonder though, because I think colorism, that's a whole nother issue that I would like that we can talk about one day. But when I think about it, that same idea that of the supremacy, particularly like in the police killings, and maybe I just don't know the facts, but we keep seeing it impacted in the Black community. But, you know, has anybody heard statistics in the white community? I mean, white people may not be getting killed by the police, but are they being harassed by, you know, whether it's because they're younger, where police officers are stopping young white people because their tags are expired and coming at the same kind of compliance, you do what I say. I mean, it may not end up in a killing, which I think is where the being Black starts to have an issue, is a factor. But I don't know, have you heard anything in that regard?
Yeah, it happens, but like you just kind of alluded to, not for the same reasons. Like, the worst thing a Black man can do to a police officer, period, but especially to a white police officer, is say no.
Absolutely.
Or appear to be defiant. Ask
right,
a question.
By asking a question.
Yeah, asking a question.
God forbid you ask a question.
So you ask a question and they're all right away.
Why are you pulling me over?
You know, as soon as you say, why are you pulling me over? They're on the little radio. Can we get another unit back here? We got a wise guy. We got a smart ass.
Wow.
Man that knows his own rights. As soon as you know your own rights, you're a smart ass. So now I got to go. I got to bring in the thugs, bring in the goons. As soon as the goons get there, their whole attitude changes.
And police act like they don't know that that's the deal. I don't mean any harm, but the psychopath that I dated before is an ex-DC police officer, okay? And whenever he got pulled over, he would have the phone open and I could hear anything that transpired because he knew. He was a cop.
He knew his culture, though. He knew the culture.
Mm-hmm.
Do you know what's so crazy about that? That's like the most basic thing, that if a policeman pulls you over, you would have to ask why. I mean, what the alternative is that you would just drive over to the side of the road and be silent while they do what?
Look, unbeknownst to you, in another life, when I was a younger man, I had so many speeding tickets up and down 95 going to Philly. They were about to take my license. My points had got up so high, but I have been pulled over by all kind of cops. And my whole thing is, I've always defied any stereotype. My voice is as white as I can get it. It's, but it's always been, hey, whatever. Do you know why I pulled you over? I said, I'm usually a little heavy on the pedal, so I could have been going too fast. Why don't you tell me? And I've tried to make it friendly, and that crap has worked for me. Many times I didn't even get a ticket because the interaction was so pleasant. You know, drive safely, Mr. Make Thomas. Laugh. Yeah. So that's worked for me. Now, I've told that to young brothers, and they say, oh, you're a coon. So you went out there basically, Tom. I'm like, yeah, but I went home.
Okay. Wow. Yeah.
That's my goal, to go home. You're Winston, trying to make a stance and be hard, and you get what you get.
You get what you get.
Winston, and I totally hear you, and I will be perfectly frank. Up until 2010 or 11, I wondered whether or not we were big dealing it. Are we making more of a big deal out of this than it is? Are black men really getting pulled over at this rate, the whole nine yards? I was literally in my own neighborhood when said psychopath, we're in the car together, my car, driving home from one of my gigs at 3:15 in the morning, when a rookie police officer who got to feeling himself pulled us over on my street and cut the fool. And as soon as he pulled up to the car and or walked up to the car and asked Najee to roll his window down, and Najee rolled his window down, and he said, listen, we're just trying to get home. We're 150 yards away from the house. He was pleasant the whole night. He said, do you know why I pulled you over? Najee said, no. And then I don't know what the heck happened from that moment on, but it completely escalated. And at some point he was face down on the pavement. I was losing my mind. There was three other cop cars behind us, and he was cooperative and friendly and funny the entire damned time until he ended up face down on the pavement. And then it was just like all bets were off. And when he came up, he was cussing, called dude all kinds of fish, because fish is apparently a term for a rookie police officer. And the guy said to him, well, at least I'm not a criminal. Oh my God, it went totally south. I got a copy of the police report after the fact, and they lied. Everything that they said happened in their police report did not happen. And it took me 17 hours to bail him out.
Wow. Wow.
It's funny, yeah, because I've had crazy. A similar situation, Brooke, where I've been stopped by the police, a couple of times, but in one time, again, three blocks from my house with my younger sister in the car. She might've been 8 years old at the time. So I think I had just got my, I was 20 maybe. So she might've been 8 to 10, somewhere in there. I don't know why they stopped us. And it started with one police officer. Next thing I know, it was several cars surrounding us, you know? And I mean, and they're talking to us on the loudspeaker, you know, the whole thing. And, you know, so it's something about saying, why are you stopping? Why did you pull me over? As opposed to the police officer saying, did you know why I pulled you over? Somehow that keeps it calm. Somehow if you say, why did you pull me over? You know, then that's another issue, you know?
Well, sure. I don't know if you remember this, because you know how your memory gets spotty sometimes.
Under the bus.
But try hard and think back. You were with me. I was driving years ago. We were going downtown Baltimore one night. And they were doing some kind of random stops or whatever. We got pulled over. The cop ran my license and he told me, oh, wow, you came up as a failure to appear for a court case. And I was like, me? I was like, nah, I said, I don't have any issues like that. He pulled out his tablet and pulled up my face. Evidently, I had gotten some kind of summons that never was really served for something civil.
Yeah.
And I didn't make the case. Young white boy, he says to me, yeah, you seem like a nice guy though. So, you know, figure that out, get it handled, and you guys have a nice evening.
Yeah.
Now, I understand that that's just me. You know, we have a joke, Cheryl and I, she calls me the blessed one. But that's why, Brooke, that's why it's so hard for me to believe some of the stories I hear that happen to other people. But I do recognize that those things do happen. But there's something inside of me, because of my experiences, over and over again that says something has to really go south before you're getting shot and beaten because nobody's ever treated me like that.
Well, that's why I always keep telling you, Winston, and you're right. I have no recollection of what you're talking about. But that doesn't mean it didn't happen.
See the back sleep.
But the fact that it hasn't happened to you is just the same as with white people, because they don't, it doesn't happen to them. They can't seem to accept that. And they don't seem to believe with black people telling them this happened. And it wasn't until they saw Derek Chauvin kill George Floyd for 10 minutes. That's what it took for white people to say, oh,
gotcha.
Black people been telling the truth all this time, you know?
And so, all the other videos didn't mess her up a hill of beans. Like, they've seen it over and over and over again.
No. The underlying thought, Winston, is,
and it's not to be funny, but on the colorism scale, you are light-skinned. And if you speak like a white person, they are going to talk to you different.
Correct.
There is the darker, like you said, with regard to the media, you start adding that shadow and all that other good stuff because you make people appear darker. That darkness is the thing that apparently is the darker you are, the bigger the threat. You know what I'm saying? It's just, it's insane. Mm-hmm.
And just like the guy in the military that got pulled over.
Oh, yeah.
He's in the military, for God's sakes.
With the uniform on.
But he was dark skinned. He was a dark skinned guy.
But he talked back. He talked back.
No, the first thing. The first thing he asked was.
The car with guns out.
And the first thing he asked was, officers, why did you pull me over? You know, so he wasn't belligerent or anything like that.
No. Let's tell the story. Here was the original agitation. When they initially threw their flashes on, he didn't stop because he says he wanted to go to a well-lit area.
Which is what the police tell you to do.
Right. But in his case, that was the first agitation, and that's why they came out ready, because they thought he was up to no good.
So think about this. You pull into a well-lit gasoline station where somebody is working, so you're up to no good where you can be seen doing something stupid? That doesn't even make any sense. So with your guns out in a well-lit place, as opposed to, I would be more scared in the dark where I can't see what he's doing. And the reason they pulled him over was bogus, because they said they pulled him over because he didn't have a license tag. And the damn thing is sitting right there in the window, and you could see it from the camera in the police car.
No. I said what I described, that was just the initial agitation. When they got in the light and they saw he was also had nerve enough to be a Negro, that's when it was on. Okay.
Yeah. and an officer.
They knew
a sergeant. He wasn't a private. He was an officer. He was a lieutenant. First lieutenant. Oh, hell no.
No, they knew he was black before he got to the gas station.
I don't know about that.
No, that's why they stopped. They pulled him over, like you said, because of the license plate. They wouldn't have done that. They did that because he was a black guy driving with no license plate in their minds.
I don't think they could see him. At that point, sure.
On the highway,
you can't see. From the back, you can't tell what the race.
Well, I don't know that they stayed in the back. They could have pulled up alongside. I mean, I don't know. Those are some specifics I don't know about. But the fact that he did pull over, even if they were agitated at first, the fact that he pulled over should have squashed that, because if he was up to no good, he would have flown off. He would have gone fast, gone away. He would not have stopped. The fact that he
certainly wouldn't have driven below the speed limit into the gas station for a minute and a half.
That's crazy, like you said, it could have been a woman. And they know that that's what they tell anybody to do that, but they tell women to do that.
He been an older white man when they got in the light, they would have went a whole different direction.
Yep. They'd have said, sir, you'd heard sir so many times.
And they even said, why is it that you know, as people of color or whatever, that end up not pulling over immediately? And I'm like, well.
Yeah. But once again, they don't get it.
Let me ask this, because this sort of moves us to another topic that I did want to get to today. They're talking about how we're going to fix this. Is it training? Is it recruiting different kinds of candidates to be police officers. And, you know, and I have a certain view that I think that police officers come from either people who were either in the military or people who, men who played sports, who were on sports teams. There's a certain manner that these guys have, a way that they're used to functioning. And it can get to extremes, you know?
No.
And I wanted to talk about military extremism, but I see that it's connected to me, to the police, these police killings and the way that the police are approaching people. Because the escalation of these things is so fast, but it's so unnecessary. But it comes from this place of compliance where the police feel like you have to be compliant to what I say. You have to do what I say.
Yeah, not the law, not the law. It's not because you broke the law, it's because you didn't do what I said. And I'm a white male and with a uniform. And I went through training just so I could have this exact. And you're not doing what I say. I could just shoot. That's what offends them. Not that the law was broken. You didn't obey. Why are you putting handcuffs on me? You didn't refuse to follow a lawful order. You refuse to follow a lawful order. You get out the car, man. That's not a lawful order. Yes, it is.
I see all of that in a line. It's a pipeline.
I don't think that most guys, if they were any kind of good athlete, those aren't the guys that are on it. It's these guys that could second team, never got to play. Their big brother was all city. Okay. Their sister was all state in her sport. All right. And they were like the third team guy. They're the joke of the family. And somebody says, hey, you know, they're looking for police officers in Cincinnati. And they get on the, and for the first time in their life, they got a uniform on, baby. Okay, big brother doesn't have a uniform. Big sister doesn't have a uniform. I'm the man now. I'm going to prove it. I'm going to get me Negro right now. Am I close?
You were on it. You're
okay.
On it.
Low self-esteem, need to be seen as important. It's never happened. Why is the average age of a police academy 27 years old? What they've been doing those other 10 years? That's the average. I mean, there's some 35, 38-year-old dudes in there, okay, on their second and third career. They were boxing groceries at Kroger's 6 months ago. Heard they were looking for cops, and all of a sudden, now they got a badge and a gun. And less than a year ago, I used to, like, sort of look at you and chuckle as I saw you going in for your job midnight to 8, stacking, you know, stocking shelves. You know, we don't have the best. We should do a better job. You talk about fraternity, Cheryl. My fraternity, Omega Psi Phi, they're close to getting in trouble, okay? But what we did, we fixed that by no pledging, okay, and doing due diligence on the front end so there's no problems on the back end. So there's less guys, the fraternity's not growing as fast, but the quality of people is improving because we just had fools in there, okay, and it had to stop. Same, you got to do a better job on the front end. All these things are like, if this happens, we don't have police, and this is the rule we're going to do for police. How about having it so those things don't even happen? We don't have to worry about impunity because they're not happening. We're not happening as rapidly. Fix it on the front end. But right now, anybody can hold a badge and a gun, and if you can't quite run the mile in 10 minutes, you know, if you do 11, we need cops so bad, that's good enough.
Part of the problem is we got two historical issues here that are colliding. Number one, the Second Amendment is like our right to be able to possess a gun is second only to our ability to speak. Like that does, to me, that in and of itself is like this priority thing that's completely out of freaking whack. We got too many damn guns in the country.
That's true.
Right there. Number one. And then number two, if you look at the history of policing in the United States, it has a racial and racist component to it from day one, any which way, because it's all about protecting property, and slaves were considered property. And so the capture and the collection of slaves was a part of the original policing in our nation. And we just haven't evolved very much since then.
Well, let me ask though, because I wanna stay on this topic, the connection between extremism and maybe I'm wrong because I never participated in group sports. I've only done individual sports. So, But I always notice, like with football teams and basketball teams, and now that you mention it, fraternities, I guess, there's this group pride or this group thing that they do, you know, when they all get together and put their hands together, get together and go, oof, you know, like before the game, you know, like they're going to win. And the coach says, what are we going to do? We're going to go kill them. Woof. And everybody's, you know, whatever it is. But there's a camaraderie.
What was that sound to make? Was that sound to you again?
Yeah, I knew you would like that, Mike. Woo, woo.
Okay. That's like that's a sheepdog and a poodle.
Yeah, clearly, I've never been in the locker room with the athletes. Okay, but my point is, there's a way that they function that has to do with their camaraderie and their strength and their encouragement to destroy the other. I mean, I see that in sports. I see that in the military. I'm seeing it in the policing. So to me, it's all the same kind of guy.
Yeah, it's ancient Rome. That comes from ancient Rome and the gladiators. That's all. But
does it? I don't know. Yeah. But I'm questioning it. You know, if you're going to stop it, if you're going to try to affect extremism in the military or this overexertion in police activity or whatever it is, how do you fix that? I mean, you've got to figure out where that's coming from.
I want to say, speak to that. The points Mike made were excellent. And here's why I don't think it can be fixed. Because if you think about it, any person that has other options in their life, in other words, they could pick various vocations and professions. Mm. Why on earth would you ever be a cop?
Mm.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I'm glad someone is willing to do it. However, I don't. And I don't think anybody with options in their lives would.
I see.
So who do you have left?
Boy.
The guys that really didn't, you know, they need that job.
They need that. They need the job. And they need that thing that makes them feel whole as an American male. Okay.
I don't know. Kind of feel like, I mean, because... like teaching, like why on earth would anybody be a teacher? God knows why.
Oh, there's a statement for that. There's an answer for that.
What?
There's an answer for that. I heard it in the movie, what was that? School of Rock. They said, those that can't do, teach.
Teach.
But also,
anyway, moving right along.
That was a horrible,
I'm not even dignifying.
No,
but it is kind of true.
To that question for both police officers and teachers that I've heard is if you ask why would you become a teacher or why did you become a cop, the answer I've always heard is I wanted to help people, you know. And for some reason, people. I mean, I personally, no, I see it for either.
No, they didn't say they wanted to help everybody. They said they wanted to help people.
Right.
Select people. Now, I didn't say they want to help everybody. I want to help the people I want to help. Okay, and I'm gonna have to do that by jacking up some people that I don't want to help. I think most police officers.
You're joking, but there's major truth to that.
No, I'm not joking. I'm saying it in a joking fashion. But you're right, Brooke. I'm not. There is major truth to that. I think many people think that their job as police officers, even some black ones, is to protect the status quo, protect the masses' house. Okay, and if that happens to be a black household is up in the good neighborhood, they can protect that. Okay, as well as a white. But I think that's what they protect the status quo, even though you're not even a member of the status quo. Caleb, Dwayne, all right? You didn't see Beauregard and all those folks who fought the Civil War? Well, hell no, honey child. It was little poor white trash out there fighting the Civil War. People who never owned slaves, couldn't afford to own slaves, didn't even too dumb to realize the slaves were taking their job. You're a leather tanner, but you can't get no business because we got old rascals over here doing it for free. And yet you went out and fought for that. It's the same people who are now wearing badges in small towns and in some big cities in the United States. That's, like Brooke said, it hasn't changed that much.
Oh, my God. And nothing's worse than a black cop in front of some white cops because he's bending over backwards to prove he's not giving any favoritism to the black person. Yeah. So he's like, he's going to beat you extra hard just to show his white comrades that he's not favoritism. You know, he doesn't practice favoritism.
Speak. There is a white police officer, ex-Marine from Baltimore, who came out and hit the Speaker's Bureau after the Freddie Gray uprising. His name is Michael Wood. If you get a chance to Google him, Michael Wood, he is phenomenal. Young white boy talks about his, how he realized, you know, how entrenched racism is into the policing and society. And he talked about being a cop in Baltimore and how he learned that basically cops, like Mike said, are there to protect this group of people from that group of people.
And that's why what Winston just said, and I talked to my son before I became, to ask him about that extremism. And he's like, the closer you are to that status quo that they're trying to protect, the more of a break you get. I said, did you have any of these microaggressions when you were at school? He said, no, Dad, because first of all, the way I speak, I'm lighter than most people. I'm an officer. He said, most of this stuff is, more of this stuff is enlisted man's things, okay? The masses. He says, well, I didn't get it. He said, I think it's many a down the line. Once again, those who were never able to accomplish anything, they get in the service and they get, but they still have those things. And no, he said, I do know that if you take Omega Psi Phi off my son's resume, you don't know he's a black kid at all. There's nothing on, he looks just like Chad and CJ's resume, all right? And that's his disposition as well, at least in public. Now in private, you know he's, you know how we all have two faces we put on. That's part of our survival, you know?
It's called the Wayne Brady syndrome.
Oh, why are you gonna dog my boy?
But let me ask you.
That's a good one, man.
In the PBS piece that I saw about the extremism, a point that was made though is that the extremism is tolerated more for the white military personnel as opposed to blacks. And the example was, if you were following the Black Panthers and that kind of, if you were into the Black Panthers as a African-American military person, as opposed to being into the Oath Keepers, you know, that's not gonna be tolerated. The Black Panther participation is not gonna be tolerated, but the Oath Keepers would be, you know? So if you're participating on that level, and then when you come out of the military, you go into policing and you're taking that with you, you know, I mean, how can we expect anything different? So, I don't know, again, if you're trying to figure out how to stop or affect the police killings, and you can see a connection between extremism in the military, for example, and you see on January 6th, a lot of those people participating, at least 15%, were either ex-military or ex-police or current police officers, you know? Yeah. So how do you even affect that? I mean,
You don't.
I was about to say, and you lost me at how do you expect to change it? I don't expect to change it. I don't expect it to change. Yeah. I think it is deeply entrenched and wired into our American way of life.
We won't see if it doesn't. We won't see it for we won't be around. And it's once again in that same piece that at the end when I talked to Jeff about this again. If you remember, he said, you know, how do these people? They asked themselves, how can somebody be so rudderless? Was the term he used. He said, but these guys get out and they have nothing. They're out of the service. And, hey, I used to be a Marine. And people are like, oh, so did I.
Yeah.
You know, it's the easiest one to get in. Okay. No big deal. Used to be a Marine. So what? And so they like, there's nothing. They have nothing. Some of them don't have any jobs. They weren't that sharp. So they didn't get jobs like working on aircraft and working on submarines, highly trained jobs, but they can go out and make that $125,000 right off the jump. They were like maintenance, guard duty, all right, supply. And then you can go get $18 an hour for those jobs. So they like, I'm a white American male who served this country, and this is all y'all can give me. You know, but I see this guy over here and this guy over here, and they do is play football. They have a better life than me. I'm angry. And I can't blame it on other white people because that won't do me any good. I know whose fault it is.
Maybe that's the way you affect it. You know, maybe if this country did treat its veterans better and gave them a better life when they come out of the service, then they wouldn't bring with it all of their mental anguish.
That was the point of Jeff. Job,
which winds up being a police officer or something.
Exactly. Yeah, that was the point that Jeff made at the end. He said, you know, they need something they can hang on to other than conspiracy and insurrection. You know, those they actually thought for the, going back to January 6th, for some of those people, for the first time in my life, I'm doing something important. That's how misguided they were. Not all, some of them are just, you know, low lives, but a lot of them really thought that they were participating on something that was akin to the French storming the Bastille. That January 6th would be the same as Bastille Day. They were so just misguided and confused and ignorant and undereducated.
And you know what? And part of me really does, I have empathy for that, because they literally were told by their president. And I'm patriotic, but I also, and I like Barack Obama, but I'm not going to go out and do everything Barack Obama said just because he said it.
I'm not going to start smoking cigarettes because he smoked cigarettes.
Right. But these are people who believed in their president to that level. And yes. If he said something is wrong in this country and we got to fix it, and I need you to come here on this day and I need you to go do this, they did that, you know, and to a certain degree, you know, I don't support that they busted up into the Capitol and defaced it and all that kind of thing, but I truly understand it. Yeah. And don't necessarily think that they should be facing, decades in prison.
Well, let's face it, Cheryl, that's how this country got started.
Yeah.
It is. You're right. That's exactly right.
Yeah, so they're thinking that this is their 1776 all Amen. Over again.
Amen.
The country.
Amen. Some except, of those guys, yep.
Except they got in there and then got stupid. Didn't have a plan.
They never planned. Still failed. And their leader, who's going to be right there with them, was at home watching them on the big screen eating burgers and drinking Diet Coke. Okay? I'll be right there with you. And then, yeah, he'll be right there. And off they went. They really thought this was going to be their, I like the way Winston said, their 1776 moment. And it wasn't. It was absolutely terrible. And people lost jobs, lost customers, you know, came back to like, you don't need to come in on Monday. You can stay in D.C. a little longer if you like, because your job is gone. And Trump wasn't there to fix, to give him a job back. A lot of people got burnt because, once again, they were so desperate for something to make them feel what they thought they deserved to feel because of privilege. And, you know, but you're in a world now, the less education you are, the less privilege you have, you know, and some of us have out.
But even though they weren't successful, the effort or the motive, the fact that they were that motivated, do you need that?
Things
change? I mean, because if you're talking about extremism, maybe, or just life in the military, period, you know, if you're in combat, maybe you need that level of extremism for you to be successful or for you to be able to accomplish what you need.
Cheryl. It was a good show they put on, but behind the scenes, they knew, because Trump had sent the word out through the Pentagon, do not hurt these guys when they show up. That's why nobody got shot. That's why the police would not shoot back. It came out like last week, finally.
I did not hear that, man. I gotta look
that up. Yeah, they found the memos. Trump's head guy at the Pentagon put out a notice. Do not use lethal force against these people. The guys knew that as well. The reason why I know that, because when they were supposed to come back on the 20th, nobody showed up because real deal was going to be waiting for them. They're not totally crazy.
Yeah, you get one, some things you get one shot at, okay? And surprising people is one of them, okay? You can't jump out the bushes and holler boo at me but one time. But you can do it again, but I'm not scared the next time, okay? In fact, I might be swinging the next time, okay? Same thing. You know, basically, they knew that the attitude in D.C. was basically this, bring your ass back here and see what happens. That was they knew that, yep. The world knew that. I wasn't expecting anything on January 20th, and there was nothing, okay? They're foolish. Some of them are crazy, but not all of them are crazy. Please, like Winston and I have been saying, you know, when y'all got drones that can shoot, okay, these people couldn't have stood up against water cannons, okay? If they'd hit them with water cannons on that cold day, would have been over. Would have been over. Forget it. You out there 25, 30 degrees, and now you wet in a crowd, it's over. But they didn't even do that, you know? But I didn't know that Trump had told him not to harm him. But water cannons, oh, I would love to see him soaking
wet. We don't know that Trump said it. You're right. I saw the memo or the report that said that.
Oh, man, I got to see that.
They don't have it that Trump said that. I don't think. So, okay. And I think that's what they're looking for. If they can find something that really identifies that Trump gave the direct order, that might make a difference, you know. But
what about Biden? Biden? You want to do Biden? I was going to speak on this. No, his first 100 days.
I just was about to ask because, you know, we're coming up on closing out our hour. But I did want to ask, Joe Biden comes up on his 100th day on Thursday. And I've been looking at the different polls that are asking about, you know, how Americans feel about his administration so far and certain bills that he's trying to get passed and things like that. And, you know, he's doing pretty well with Republicans as well as Democrats in certain areas, depending, particularly on how he's dealing with the COVID situation and that. But, you know, just going around with you all, what do you think about how Joe's doing so far?
I think I would have given him an A minus, but I give him a B now. He's got to do something about the border, okay? But he's done a great job on getting, you can't make people take a vaccination they don't want to take. But I think he's got it where anybody who wants a vaccination can get one. If you don't want to take one, that's also part of being an American too, your right to choose. So I think on the vaccination, he's done well. I think on trying to keep some of the promises, he's done well. And of course, if we compare to what, he's definitely done an improvement over the last president.
Which is really crazy because, you know, Trump could have gone out on top a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, if he had just dealt with the COVID situation, because the vaccine did come out during, you know, well, at least getting it going was during his administration. And he was still in office once it became available. And if he had just had a plan to distribute it or anything, or just take control of the situation, we'd be talking about it as Trump did it, you know, even though he left us open to it in the first place, but he did, you know, address it and get people vaccinated and all of that. But he just let it go and went and played golf, you know, and let Joe put his plan in place and, you know, he gets the credit. So that's just sort of,
I think Joe's done a great job. I think he's doing a great job, but he's going to go ahead. He's got a 100% commit. He's still trying to keep the old days alive. He's still trying to be, you know, he's trying to be loved by both sides. And that's just not going to happen. That day has passed.
It's a new kind of politics.
And he needs to hire somebody to kick Manchin down the steps or something. And once he does that, everything should move smoothly.
Yeah, you got to play a little more hardball, but out of the suit, I think he's doing well. I think the country is healthier, not just from a pandemic perspective, a pandemic point of view, but I think psychologically, there's a large exhale. It's so cool to take out, and I think if you ever saw the Michael Rapaport piece when he lost, and he said, I got so sick and tired of waking up in the morning, turning on the TV saying, what did he say? What did he do? Mm-hmm. Who did he offend? And for a change, you know, we don't have that. We don't, you know, that's how I used to treat, you know, I would come home from work, you know, and it'd be like, okay, what? I knew when I pulled in that driveway, which one was it? What did they do? What, okay. But those guys were children, they were kids, all right? We were feeling the same way about an adult. What did he say? Who did he offend? What world leader did he offend? You know, it's not, you know, being jealous of the kid, I come and kick so young, what's his name in Canada? Trudeau, because he's a clearly good-looking guy, and Melania likes to hold his hand, and this, you know, he just carries, grudges so deep, you know. The Barack Obama, and Barack did berate him pretty badly to his face at the press conference at the the Washington Press Club, ate him up, and every time he got a chance, they put a camera on him, and he kept blowing up bigger and bigger. His jaws were tight. His head got about to explode. And Barack just cut him up and then said, Obama out.
But you see, carried that forever. They're still doing a recount of Trump votes in Arizona today. You know, Brooke, what do you think about Joe Biden's first 100 days?
I mean, not particularly eventful. I think he's doing a good job rolling out the vaccine, which is obviously the nation's number one priority and where it needs to be focused. Mm-hmm. I think the situation at the border, Kamala Harris said it beautifully. She's talking about needing to get the aid down into the countries that helps to create a scenario that makes them not want to need to leave their home. And so they're on it. I think we're so used to the insanity of the last 4 years that it's kind of, dull, which is great. Yeah. I'm like, hallelujah for dull.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
For that kind of dull.
Just handle your business. You know, it's like in the network administration industry, they say the sign of a good network administrator is that you don't even know they're there. Because all of your stuff is running and doing like it's supposed to do, and there's no brouhaha.
Yeah, so actually, there was a comedian. Go ahead.
I was going to say, so if we can get through the next 4 years with that kind of peace and quiet where he's just running the country and we're okay, life is good. But at the same time, we need to not be complacent. We really do need to stay on top of things and know and understand what's going on. And I don't want to see us lose sight of that just because things have become sane again.
Still need the infrastructure bill. Anybody's been to Pittsburgh, you can see it. Just bridges and overpasses that are crumbling and big cracks in them. And I'm sure
we need something completely different. And we need women going into construction, for the love of God. I would love to see that, more and more women going into construction fields, because the money is there. And mm-hmm. Especially if we flip to a green industry and start building super trains and all that other good stuff, there's a lot mm-hmm. of work to be done. There's absolutely the problem with.
No. Don't start with what the problem is, because that's another whole conversation. Okay. I know that's going to take us some more time, and we got to get ready to close out and get out of here. But I did want to say something to what you said, Brooke, when you were talking about the dysfunction of Trump's administration. There was a comedian who had said, you knew we were in trouble with Trump because for the first time, citizens knew the names of all the cabinet members. He said, when did you ever know that before? Never paid attention to that. But with Trump, you knew who the department, the Secretary of Education was, and who the Secretary of Defense was, because so much stuff was messed up. They were on the news all the time and they were being talked about. So that's, so that has maybe set a new precedent. So now, I wouldn't say that about Joe, that's the reason we know, but I think that, I definitely think that comedian had a point to make. But I want to thank you guys, because like I said, there was so much going on, and these police killings have been really at the top of the news cycle for days. I mean, so many other things had happened and just got pushed aside, the Asian hate crimes and the, just so many other things. But, this one is going to stick around for a while, because, these are our lives that we're talking about, our actual lives, and it can happen to anybody. So even though, Winston, I know you've been fortunate to date, and, we want to keep that going, but keep it in mind. So everybody try to stay safe. So I want to thank you guys one more time for joining me on the podcast, the Old School News Crew, which includes Mike Easterling.
Hello, on time today.
Okay. And Brooke Barrick.
I'm going to go watch these Oscars, which is going to be a whole other battle tonight.
I sort of wanted to talk about that a little bit, but being able to make the transition between the Oscars was going to be a big jump. So maybe we'll talk about it after we find out who won.
Killed Billie Holiday. Okay, I'm done.
I'll say this about the Oscars. My issue is, why are we still running around trying to get awards and appreciation from a group of people who clearly don't care? So the Academy is not trying to award, and we shouldn't be begging them to acknowledge excellence in the Black community. But that's another issue. We could talk about that maybe next week.
Girl,
we know about the winners.
Begging nobody for nothing.
I remember one artist saying that they appreciated getting the NAACP award more because it came from their own people than they did getting this Academy Award. You don't even have to, as an Academy member, you don't even have to watch the film to vote. So, and it's so overwhelmingly white, but I'm getting into another conversation we're going to hold. So Winston Thomas, the last of the Old School News Crew, thank you so much for being here.
All right. We want to be loved. That's what it is.
And before we go, is anybody seen Ben Carson walking around Baltimore?
Ben Carson should never come back here again.
He's back.
Is he back? Where is that clown?
He was just on some program the other day that my mother was watching based in Baltimore where they were talking about, I don't even remember no more. Mm-hmm. I can't lose them.
There was 12 years of slave, and then there was Ben Carson's story, 4 years of clown. And both of them are up for
I wish somebody would interview him and ask him some straightforward questions.
Yes, just about
what the hell was like, wrong with you. What the heck
made you think you could run housing and urban development? That is the one question I want to ask. Like, son, stay in your lane.
Really? A career like that just
yeah.
Black. Young people. Well, at least they had him talking about medicine on whatever show it was he was on.
But a lot
Did
of young people.
Did he ever give a
never...
comment about COVID? I don't even remember him even weighing in.
Yo, and remember. That was so wild because they had the whole COVID team standing behind.
He wasn't on it.
And then he came up there. He's standing there, and they ain't even have him talking about anything medically related. And I was just like, wow, this is a whole new level of
4 years of clown.
Wow.
But you know one thing though, we always talk about how black people have to be. What did you say?
Oh, Winston.
He caught it. He did.
But you know, this goes back to that whole thing about black people saying that you have to be twice as good to get half as far.
Yeah.
He is a man who literally separated a two-headed person, okay, into two people who could live lives, and yet he winds up that wasn't enough. That wasn't enough. Yeah. You know? So
Cheryl. I gotta say, after his whole run for the presidency and then his falling into the housing, like the head of housing and urban development, all I could think to myself was brain surgery must not be that hard.
And on that note, we're closing out. Thank you, Ms. Brooke Barrick, for that one.
That's a good
Thank
one,
you
Brooke.
All. I appreciate you being here.
Appreciate you back.
One more time for your girl, Cheryl, and the Old School News crew. Check us out. Thank you.
Bye. That was good.
I got